Welcome all. We welcome guests at any time at the Ottawa PC User Group meetings, either Q&A or regular monthly meetings. If you want to become a member, I've put the link to join in the chat. You can also just go to our homepage and click on the link at the top for join or renew. But feel free to continue to join as a guest if you so desire. We don't have a huge agenda tonight, but we have a couple of more lengthy items, I think, in that. So I think I'll kick it over right away to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. Alan, take it away.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chris. yes, we have a few items prepared, so let's get right into it. And the first one we have is a follow-up to Jeff's presentation last week on streaming TV. And this is from the members user forum. Stuart posted this note that CTV News Channel is now available without an account. And he notes that that's better than CBC Gem, which makes you pay for, I guess it will be CBC News Network. If you want to get to CTV News, then there's the link to get to the live broadcast over the internet. However, Jeff came back with some information that Kodi, which is a media player application, it provides publicly available streaming sources, and it includes the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation as an add-on. So if you install the add-on into Kodi, then you get all of the video on demand items that are available in Gem, but you also get access to CBC's live streaming, and CBC News Network therefore can be streamed this way using Kodi and the Gem login credentials, which you can obtain at no cost. So there's a couple of follow-up for people who are interested in streaming TV and need to keep up with Canadian news on both of our major networks. Okay, next up we have a question that came in and an answer from Chris.
Yeah, so this came in from Elizabeth, and she had a problem with Office 2007, which every time she started up either Word or Excel, it would say configuration in progress, please wait. And then everything worked fine after the dialog box went away, but it happened absolutely every time that she started up Word or Excel. So she was looking for a fix for it. I did a little bit of search on it, and it seems to be not all that uncommon a problem, because there were a few suggestions that were made to fix the problem. One I came across was a registry change, and they actually gave a regadd command that you could do at the command line where it would apparently fix the problem. And that was on the Answers Forum at Microsoft. And I tend to trust the Answers Forum, because although not all the answers are coming from Microsoft itself, and in fact, I think that Microsoft employees are not supposed to be on the answer forum answering questions. But you can bet that there are very learned people that if anybody's posting inaccurate information, it's flagged very quickly. So that's probably a good one. Another option I saw was to do a repair on Microsoft Office. And I have a note here saying that no guarantee this will work with Office 27 or 2007, because it's no longer supported. So who knows what will happen when you try to repair on Office 2007. I suspect it probably would work, but it probably wouldn't do any damage even if it isn't supported anymore. And so for that, basically you just go to Settings, Apps, Installed Apps. You get all the list of your installed apps. You go down, find the entry for Microsoft Office, and you click on the meatball menu, which is the three horizontal dots, and then you choose Modify and then Online Repair, and hopefully that would fix it. Another one, which was kind of curious, it said to just go to the Office 12 folder, which the whole path is listed there, and you rename setup.exe in that folder, to something else. So you could just delete it if you wanted, but renaming it means you can easily put it back if something bad happens. And so next.
There's no next.
Oh, there's no next?
Nope.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So yeah, it turned out that Elizabeth says that she actually did that one options free, and it actually worked for her. So I don't know about the other two. I don't have Office 2007, and so I couldn't actually check out what any of these would actually do. One caution that I gave to Elizabeth was that Office 2007 is no longer supported, which means there is no patches that are going to come out for any security issues, or there may not be patches that come out for any security issues. And I'm a little bit reluctant to run any piece of software that is not supported by the vendor from a security point of view. I don't particularly care about functionality and features and things like that, but from a security point of view, I want to use software that is supported. And I think Elizabeth is going to look into one of the inexpensive options that people have talked about of getting older versions of Office for, $50 or less. And so I think she's going to actually go ahead and do that. But this did fix the problem for her on that.
If you're using an older version of Office, I use Office 2007. And in fact, I have the same problem, but it disappears quickly, so I don't worry about it. But what I have done is turn off, use the Windows Firewall using the Windows Firewall control program I showed earlier. I turned off any internet access by any of the Office apps. This not only prevents any virus from or macro from doing bad things to you. It also makes the help work.
Well, I beg to differ a little bit on that, though, because just blocking Word is not necessarily going to protect you from everything. So if you get, just as an example, if you get a piece of, something that is going to trigger a security issue in WinWord.exe or any of the Microsoft Office applications, it could do something local. So, for example, it could just, drop a file that was part of the package into somewhere else and execute it. And that would not necessarily be blocked. So I think it may be a false sense of security to just block the Office apps from accessing the internet. They could do other bad things on your local computer.
I've also turned off all macros as well on in Word.
Yeah, that's always a good thing for sure.
Not a good thing if you want to use macros.
Yeah, that's true.
Macros.
Yeah, they
Okay,
are there
that
for
makes
good
sense.
purposes.
So there was a follow-up question from Elizabeth on Kodi. She says it's been around for a long time, but she wonders if it's safe. And Jeff says he's been using Kodi for years, and he points out it's open source and it is safe, and especially if you use only the add-ons which come from the official Kodi repository. Okay, another question that came in was similarly solved fairly easily. Basically, Willis had bought a new laptop and installed Outlook 2010 on it, but he finds that when he deletes a message, it's the next older message lower down his list, which is previewed, when he wants it to go to the next newer message, which is higher in the list. And basically, that's the way he works. I guess that's the way he did it before, and that's the way he wants to do it now. He has the older messages at the bottom, I guess, and working his way to the new ones at the top. And the question was, how could he make Outlook work like that? Well, as with a lot of these things, a simple Google search tells you the truth. Basically, if you navigate to File Options, Mail, and Other, there are some options there that after you move or delete a message, you can select, and one of the selections is open the previous item, which is exactly what he wants to do. And I put this on the members forum, and Bill Van Dyke pointed out that yes, that particular solution works in Outlook 2019, so presumably the menus haven't changed all that much. So I passed it along to Willis, and he confirmed also that that setting did the trick on his system. So Google is a wonderful system. Sometimes it will actually find the information you need relatively quickly and accurately. Not always the case, though. Talking of which, Chris has got a share here on something about AI deception.
Yeah, Reason Labs is it's an interesting organization. It's the guy who started Reason Labs, he actually started up giant anti-spyware way back in around in the early 2000s, and it was actually sold to Microsoft, and it got turned into what eventually has become Microsoft Defender, was Microsoft Security Essentials, Windows Defender, Microsoft Defender, went back and forth with various versions of it and so forth. He comes from a background where he had a real security bent for sure. Next.
Microsoft do like to change the name of the same product, don't they?
Yeah, they do. So in this podcast that Andrew Newman had, he talks about some interesting things. It was really aimed directly at the deepfakes for the election season in the United States that they were talking about. But it really is generically an issue. And he talked about how generative AI was really lowering the barriers that people have to create realistic fake content. We've talked about this before about AI, that it can generate some pretty realistic looking stuff. And so in the podcast, Andrew breaks down how some of these advanced threats actually work and what the implications are for voters' privacy, and in particular the election. But again, it really plays into anything that we're doing on the internet. And one of the things he said was, in the past, you know, there's a statement, a commonality of statements that comes out there that says, if you see it or hear it, you should believe it. And he says, well, that's no longer the case. And he thinks that the ability to stop spot phishing emails is almost totally gone, because the scammers are getting so good at using generative AI to generate phishing emails that are really, really good. And he thinks that we need better technological solutions, but he thinks that the best approach is actually better education when it comes to being able to deal with some of the things that are going to come out of that. So it was interesting, and so I pasted the link into the chat if you want to take a look at the entire blog.
Okay, thanks, Chris. And you have another issue here in AI.
Yeah, this was another one that I found interesting. I don't know, kind of worrisome, I think. It's the world's first Miss AI competition has been announced, and it is by the World AI Creator Awards, whatever that is. And they say they are dedicated to recognizing achievements of AI creators. And so in this contest, the contestants are going to be judged on their beauty, you know, in AI, okay, and the skill and implementation of AI tools used to create the actual AI, and the social media clout as the influencers actually have. Next. So it's going to be ranked by a so-called expert panel of four judges, and I thought this was interesting. Two of them are actually going to be AI-generated influencers. So these names, I don't know where they come from or anything like that. And there will actually be two real people on the panel, one a marketing expert and one who's the head judge of a Miss Great Britain beauty pageant historian. So I thought it was a bit of a chuckle, but when it comes right down to it, next. I think we're all doomed. If this is what it's come down to, that's pretty sad that we have to have a Miss AI competition. But I did get a bit of a chuckle out of it, and I pasted the link into there at the Petapixel website if you want to read a little bit more on it. That's all I had on that.
Earlier, Bob Harris was saying he can't keep pace with all these AI-generative programs anymore. I guess here's another one for you, Bob, to chase up.
Yeah.
I think there should be a Y on the end of that instead of an A.
I think you're right.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris. We look forward with bated breath to the results, I'm sure.
If I see anything about it, I don't think I'm going to spend any time actually hunting down what the results are. But if I come across it, I will report to Q&A.
You don't think that's going to hit the national news?
I hope not.
Okay. All right, next up, KB5034441. This is that Windows update that keeps failing to install and gives you this weird error number. And if you check up, it turns out that it's because the Windows recovery partition is too small and the update can't be installed. Now, it turns out not all computers are subject to this, but those of us who have had it have had this issue since January of this year. And there's an entry from my computer maintenance log on one of my machines. One of my machines, the update installs flawlessly, and the other machine, it has this issue where it fails to install. And it's been almost 3 months, and I've been sitting tight thinking that Microsoft, in their wisdom, would create a fix for this horrendous problem. But, you know, a month, well, three months later almost, every time I run Windows Update, which is very seldom, I must admit, but when I do, this thing kicks in, and I think about it for quite a while. It failed. And so the error is still there, and Windows Update hasn't fixed anything. So, background to the issue, the problem is that it creates an issue where if you're using BitLocker encryption on your hard drive, then attackers can bypass the encryption and get to the underlying files. And then the second thing, if your PC doesn't have a WinRE, so there's kind of two things where you might not need it. If you don't use BitLocker, it strikes me that you don't really care whether attackers can bypass it or not because you're not using it. And if you don't have a Windows RE partition, then clearly it's not a problem that it doesn't have enough space because it's just not there. However, if you have the issue, then you look a bit further down the page and you find that what it needs is the update needs an extra 250 megabytes of free space in this Windows recovery environment partition. And if it doesn't have that, then you get the numerical error message and all the problems that ensue. Now, Microsoft, in their wisdom, this is coming straight from a Microsoft site, they say you can do two things. You can basically manually resize the partition, and they give you a bunch of instructions on how to do that. We'll take a look at that in just a second. Or they give you a sample script, which will increase the size of the partition for you. And the other thing I did was I checked on the Windows useless feedback hub. I've never seen anything resolved on this thing, and certainly all the problems I've reported have never been resolved this way. So I did a search for the KB number, and it turns out there are 46 individual upvotes, but one of them has more than 6,000 upvotes. And yet, you know, still Microsoft, in their wisdom, has not provided any automatic solution. You would think that since this is a Windows recovery environment, part of the Windows system, you would think that Microsoft, if they screwed it up, they should be able to fix it. However, is it ever going to be fixed? That was my question. And my guess is, no, it isn't, because it's been 3 months and nothing's happened. So you're going to be dealing with this Windows update stalling all the time, unless that you actually manually resize the recovery partition. So here's the instructions on how to manually resize the partition. And there's lots of words there and lots of things to do. But basically, it comes down to this. First of all, you make sure that the recovery environment partition is actually on your system. If it is, then you disable it. Then you run the disk partitioner, which is called diskpart. You select the partition for the Windows operating system, and you shrink that partition, the Windows partition, by at least 250 megabytes, and that then gives some free space that can be allocated to the Windows RE partition. And to do that, you delete the Windows RE partition, and then you create a new one. And then once you've created a new one with this extra 250 megabytes, then you re-enable the partition and everything is going to be hunky-dory. Right? So that's the basic strategy and series of commands. The series of commands are given in the on the website to actually do all those things. Alternatively, which would be my preference, you can use this so-called sample script. It turns out this sample script is 600 lines and more. So it's a sample script. It's not necessarily a simple script, but it is a script that Microsoft have provided. And you would think that you should just be able to run this and the magic would happen in the background and everything would be well. So next question is, who do we know who's going to take this on and fix the recovery partition? Well, clearly we need somebody who has a full disk image backup and hopefully a fairly recent full disk image backup, so that if anything goes really badly wrong, he can recover his system. So here's the entry from my maintenance log a few days ago. I made a full backup of my entire hard drive using Foxconn, which I talked about a couple of weeks ago, I think. And then the next day, I downloaded the sample script and got ready to run it. So here's the sample script. In a file or script. Now, there's one thing that you have to do before you can run PowerShell scripts, because by default, scripts that you download from the internet are disabled from running in PowerScript, in PowerShell. So you basically have to tell PowerShell that it has a new execution policy. So you use this set execution policy command, and instead of being restricted, you tell it that it's okay to use what they say is remote signed. And what that means is that anything that you've created locally on the local hard drive is applicable to be run. And since I downloaded the text and copied it into a text file on my local system, then it is effectively a local script. So with this policy change, I can run it. And here's the command to run that script. And it whirs for just a few seconds, comes back and tells me more than 250 megabytes of free space was detected in the Windows recovery environment partition. There's no need to extend it. Well, if it's already got more than 250 megabytes and it doesn't need to be extended, why is Windows Update complaining that there's not enough free space? I don't understand. Okay, so let's run the command that tells us about the Windows RE partition. And basically you can see here that the image location is on the hard disk 0 and in partition number 8. So we have to now go and look in disk management utility and under Windows. And here is disk 0 and here is partition number 8. And you can see that this thing has 11 gigabytes of space and it's 100% free, according to this listing. Now, interestingly, if you look at this thing, all of these kind of system partitions, the EFI partition, the OEM partition, all the recovery partitions, they're all 100% free. And none of them have any use space whatsoever, which makes absolutely no sense. So I decided I would check this out using the GNOME parted, gparted partition editor. And you can see here I get the same kind of list of partitions, but now my partition number 8, which is the recovery partition, is 11 gigabytes, but gparted tells me it has 10.5 gigabytes being used and 740 almost megabytes of free space. Now remember, the update needed 250 megabytes of free space. So if it's already got 750 megabytes, again, what's the problem? Why can't it make the update? And so that's kind of a bit weird. So the other thing we can do is we can go through those manual instructions. So one of the things it tells you to do is if you have the recovery environment partition, then you should disable it, and it gives you the command to do that, and the partition is disabled. And then the next thing you have to do is list the disk and find that here's my 250 gigabyte SSD, this is my main hard drive, solid state drive, it's disk zero. So I need to select disk zero. So that's good. And then one of the problems with disk management is you notice that Windows C, it doesn't give me the partition number. And some of these environments have partitions, like the one we're looking for is partition number 8, but it doesn't tell me what partition C, what partition drive C is. But notice that the partition, the operating system Windows, it's taking 139 gigabytes. So all we have to do is find a partition that's got 139 gigabytes, because that number is unique across all these partitions. So if in this partition, we select drive zero and then list the partitions, all we have to do is look down here until we find 139 gigabytes. And now we know that our Windows partition is actually partition number 5. So now what we can do is we can select partition number 5, and then we can use the shrink command. Again, this is in the off the Microsoft website. It tells me to use the shrink desired equals 250, minimum equals 250. I run that, and I get this error which says the shrink size is too big. Well, Microsoft told me to use that command, so I don't understand why the shrink size is too big. But clearly, we're not going to be able to shrink the operating partition using this command. And we've already got enough space anyway on the recovery environment, so I'm not terribly concerned. So my best bet is to, here's a shrink command failure. So my best bet is basically just delete the partition. That's what the next step was. Delete that partition. So you use this command, select partition number 8, the Windows RE partition, delete partition override, and now it has deleted it. And you can see here that now I don't have a partition number 8, which was the 11 gigabyte partition here. So I have successfully deleted that partition number 8, the recovery environment. Now, the next thing I have to do is I have to create the partition. So here's the command to create a new Windows RE partition. And I have to add some attributes for the GPT, the partition scheme. Again, these come directly from the Windows website. I don't know what these things do, but I'm told that's what I have to do. So it's done that. And then the next thing is we have to format that partition. And we give it this label, Windows RE Tools. And it has successfully formatted the volume. So now if I list the volumes, interestingly, I've got two sets of Windows RE Tools. One is called WinRE Tools in uppercase, and the other one is called Windows space RE space, and then it says Tools, but the field isn't long enough to give you the whole label. But clearly, here's the asterisk, so this is the partition or the volume that we're dealing with right now. This is the one that's selected. It's got the right label, and it's 11 gigabytes. So it's restored. It's essentially created a brand new partition, which again is 11 gigabytes, like the old one. So now we can exit and go back one. Now we can exit, get out of this partition, and then we can re-enable the Windows RE partition, right? So we've done exactly what it said we had to do, apart from the fact that it wouldn't let us resize the Windows operating system partition, but we've disabled the WinRE partition, we've deleted it, we've created a new one, and then we've re-enabled that Windows RE partition. So now if we go and have a little look over here, here is our partition number 8. And again, it's 11 gigabytes. Again, this management thinks that it's 100% free. But we know that's not true. So now we can run the Windows update again. We can just hit the retry here. And sure enough, we get a download error. And we're back to this problem that we had in the first place. So the script doesn't work. The manual system of changing the partition doesn't work. What next can we do? So we've tried running the script. That failed. We've tried manually deleting and then reestablishing the recovery environment. That didn't work. So some of the other things I tried was, well, let's just delete both of these partitions in case Windows is confused in terms of which one it thinks is actually the WinRE partition. Let's just delete both of them and then go through those manual commands and create a single recovery partition, which again turned out to be an 11 gigabyte partition. And once I had done that, Windows update still wouldn't work. So then I thought, well, if the problem is that the Windows recovery environment partition doesn't have enough free space, and one of the things was if you didn't have a Windows recovery environment partition, then the update was able to process. So why don't I just delete both of the partitions and don't create a new one? So I don't have any Windows RE partitions on my system anymore. I did that, and that didn't work. So now I'm really confused. I don't know what's wrong. Windows can't fix it. And I can't fix it by doing all kinds of crazy things. So what else can we do? Well, I seem to remember Chris saying that you could do something with updates that went bad. And so I did some Googling, and I found this website which says how you can hide updates in Windows 10. And what you need is this show or hide updates, which they call a troubleshooter. It's a Microsoft program, which Microsoft hide. I went onto the Microsoft website. I couldn't find this thing. But sure enough, in this 10 forums website, they had a download option. You know, you can download this .diag cap file. And when you download that, then you can actually run this. This is it turns out to be an .exe file. Run it through VirusTotal. Seems to be fine. There's no known issues with this thing. And remember, I still have that full system backup. If things go south, I can restore my system in basically half an hour or so. So I'm happy to download this thing and run it. So when you run it, sure enough, it says it's a troubleshooter. And it's called Show or Hide Updates, and it's got the magic Microsoft logo. It's published by Microsoft Corporation, even though they won't seem to give me access to it. And when I click on Continue, then one of the options is to hide the updates. So I click on Hide the Updates, and it gives me a list of updates which are are available, and most of them are driver updates, which I haven't bothered installing because, as far as I can tell, my drivers are working fine. I don't need driver updates. And Windows tells you that not to do that unless you have issues. But here's that KB503XXX security update. So now I'm just going to check that and let the troubleshooter hide that update. So I say next, and it whirs for a little while, and then it tells me that KB503-4441 has been fixed. And by fixed, I think they mean it's been hidden. And now when I go back and run Windows Update, I find that my system is up to date. So the moral of the story is, I don't know what the moral of the story is, if you're waiting for a fix from Microsoft for that issue, I think you might be waiting forever. 3 months seems to me like a long time. And if you're willing to dig into this update troubleshooter or hide updates troubleshooter and run it, then it looks to me as though that is a viable solution. So now when I run up Windows Update, it loads all the updates that are there, and it doesn't have to go and look for this update, which is no longer, isn't going to install. It's basically tucked that away somewhere. I guess I can run that troubleshooter again and restore it if I want to. But I don't use BitLocker. I don't need that update. Hiding the update makes my system work the way I want it to, so I'm perfectly happy.
When did you actually run that, the show hide? When did you run that, Alan?
When did I run it?
Yeah.
After I'd played with all these other stupid things that didn't work.
No, in terms of, like, how many days ago did you run it?
Today, at 12:30. Okay. It would have been when I was playing around with that stuff.
If you ran it after the 9th, Patch Tuesday, there's every chance that you will find that come next Patch Tuesday, which will be on the 14th, that the update, because they're cumulative updates, right? So when you get the monthly update, they roll things up. So you may have a failure happen again come next Patch Tuesday, and you'll have to go on whatever KB article is the new number for it. You'll end up having to hide it.
Oh, so that one won't stay hidden, right?
Well, it hides that one, but then they will roll this security update up into another one, and so it'll end up failing again. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see that happen. I had that happen with one of the monthly updates back a few years ago, and for about 3 months, I had to go and hide it every month, and then all of a sudden, everything worked. So they just silently fixed it in the background.
Only Microsoft.
Yeah.
Only Microsoft.
Yeah. One of the problems that you had was resizing the C partition, and I'm wondering if that was because it, in order to shrink a volume, I seem to recall that it had to have contiguous space at the end of the volume that was not being used by files in order to shrink. Now, they may have changed that, but I think at one point at least, it could only shrink it down as long as there was free space not used by files at the end of the partition. So maybe that's what you're running into there. Not that that would have fixed your problem for being able to get this update to actually work, but just in terms of anybody trying to resize partitions, I don't know. Does anybody have any experience with that, that they know that they can resize partitions even if files are spread out throughout the partition? I'd be curious if anybody knows that you can actually do that now.
Well, I can certainly try that, Chris. I've still got the same partition, so I can see if I can I can shrink it some other way.
Yeah. I thought shrink worked to actually move the files at the end further in as necessary.
Yeah, that would make sense for them to do that if they could. But I seem to recall this goes back many, many years. that it wasn't able to do that. But it does make sense that they would do that, where they would just move files to make space available.
Yeah, and to answer your question, Chris, that running that troubleshooter would have been after Patch Tuesday, because it was after the 20th or something. So
yeah, so keep that handy. You may need it again.
Yeah, right. Or I'll just stick with Linux and not worry about stupid Windows.
That's another option.
Okay, that's everything that we had that was prepared. So we're at that magic witching hour. If anybody has any other questions or things that you'd like to share.
I got a DM from Rosemary, and I would encourage people to send messages to all, because other people might have ideas as well. But at any rate, she attended one of the OPL presentations and had a question about spyware. She's using Norton Deluxe, and the literature indicates it provides protection against viruses, ransomware, malware. It does not specifically state protection against spyware. It would be included in that as well, for sure. I did a search for Norton spyware protection, and it returns Norton Deluxe. I don't understand the terminology. I'm sure that, Norton Deluxe would include protection against spyware. Again, as I mentioned in my presentation, nothing out there is 100%, but certainly Norton is a well-respected product, and so I would consider that it does have protection against that. Now, is it sufficient protection for your computer, especially in regards to spyware? It's probably as good as anything else. My idea with any of those programs that are dealing with malware is pick one, anyone, keep it up to date. And don't go jumping from one ship to another, because you should really go for a long haul on these things. If you find that you're chosen any malware package is consistently failing you for some reason or another, then sure, change. But if you just hear that, oh, such and such, it's better than what you've got, and everybody's got anecdotal notes about things like that, and I think it can change as to who's the best at any point in time. So just pick one, keep it up to date.
So there were a couple of comments in the chat about my Microsoft experience. Tom wants to know if suicide is the answer. No, the answer is Linux. Bill Van Dyke says, nothing that a new computer can't fix. Well, the trouble is, Bill, new computers come with Windows usually, so it may fix that problem, but there'll be another one down there.
Yeah.
And Tom thinks the answer is always to buy a new computer. Good luck, guys.
And Tom pasted in four ways to shrink a partition. So that's good. If anybody is in the position of wanting to shrink partitions or move things around, probably a good article. It's at 10 forums, which has a lot of very useful information.
So Elizabeth's asking, or she's saying, I wonder why the partitions are showing 100% used, but it's not true. I don't know. I mean, I've never noticed that before, but I haven't looked at it closely. I don't usually use disk management in Windows. I usually use Gparted. And so I'd be interested if anybody else is running disk management on the Windows to see if you are showing partitions that have different sizes or have use space and free space.
My disk configuration is just loading. Healthy recovery partition. I've got one that's 1.95 gigabytes, and it says it's 100% free. That's the only one that I have on my system. So I wonder if for some reason it's not able to detect. The only ones that are showing on my system as being anything other than 100% free are ones with a drive letter associated with them. So I've got the EFI system partition, which I know has to have something. It's only 260 megabytes, but it's showing as 100% free as well. I wonder if that's a bug in disk management that it just can't report. Yeah.
There has to be something in some of those petitions.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The EFI definitely has stuff in it, and I would hope that there's something in my recovery partition. If there's nothing in there, it's not very good as a recovery. That's curious. Never ran into that before. Anybody else got a report from their systems? If you right-click on the Start button and choose Disk Management, and then take a look at any of the partitions that do not have a drive letter associated with them, and are probably identified in the lower part as being recovery partition or the EFI system partition. Be interesting if anybody else has. Tom is saying 100%.
Well, there you go, something to add to the feedback hub.
Yeah, right. Yeah, what was he, you called it, Alan?
Useless hub, I think.
Useless hub, yeah. I still do use the feedback hub in the probably vain thought that, you know, Microsoft is actually paying attention. But if nothing else, I think that you showed that, it does point out where other people have been complaining. So if nothing else, I guess it can help if you're hurting your head banging it against the wall. It can help to stop banging your head. So if you have so many people that are complaining about the problem and nobody else has come up with a solution, the likelihood that I'm going to be able to come up with a solution is pretty slim. Yeah, Bill says he has a 449 megabyte recovery partition listed as 100% free.
I have a 500 megabyte healthy recovery partition.
And does it say that it's 100% free?
It doesn't say anything.
It should say it in the top box where it's lines.
100%.
100% free. Yeah. So I think we've confirmed that that's a bug that, for whatever reason, recovery partitions and EFI partitions and maybe every partition that doesn't have a drive letter associated with it is showing up as 100% free.
I have 100. One that's 100 and it's 100% free, and one that's 500.
And it's 100% free?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, 500% free.
No, it's 500 megabytes. It's 100% free.
Yeah, I'd love it if it was 500% free. Jeez, I'd use that for data.
And that would be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Hi, Chris. It's Corrine.
Yep.
I just wanted to share with you, I tried out a digital teammate. The Ottawa Hospital, as you all know, is building a new hospital for the Civic. And what I tested out this week was a digital assistant called Sophie, and they're going to use it to help people, I guess, with questions about the new campus built. And it was quite an experience for me. The image, right? It could, when you asked a question that it didn't understand, it reacted like almost shaking its head and her head, because she was called Sophie. And then she would wait and kind of, if she didn't have the answer, then come back, I don't know the answer. When I asked about where the funding was coming from, you know, so they have a script that they're using in terms of answering some of the questions, but when they didn't, when she was unable to answer the question, I don't have the answer to that. Anyways, could summarize. It was quite an experience, and because I volunteered to be a tester of it. So it's coming soon. That product is going to be available probably to anybody that wants to ask questions about the new campus design and build. And eventually they're going to be using it to, for workflows in the hospital. I don't know how to assist patients and staff. But I just wanted to share that with you just, something that people may or may not be interested in because, you know, we've been talking about AI quite a bit.
Yeah. So is this not available to the unwashed masses yet?
I'm not sure what the timing is. They're testing it. I know that the doctors at the Ottawa Hospital are starting to use a product, but I don't know which one to help them with their notes. And they ask the patient, do you mind if you, you know, I'm going to dictate this, and it'll come back, and then eventually that'll shorten the amount of time it takes for them to do their, you know, their after visit notes. So that's one product, but this other digital assistant should be available soon. I think that they were wanting to do it for the beginning of May, so which is next week. So anyway, I'll keep you posted if you're interested.
Yeah, definitely.
They may announce something.
How did you come across this, Corinne?
I'm one of the patient advisors at the Ottawa Hospital.
Ah, okay.
And they asked for volunteers on the, there's a digital strategy team. So I decided to volunteer for this testing, user acceptance test. So it's kind of cool. I'm not sure I can share it, but, you know, in terms of sending out some things I have shared, like when they're, you know, when it's information about certain things happening, but, I'm really interested in what their strategy is for AI and how it's going to work with patients and doctors and, but the new campus build, they said, you know, is going to be, you know, technologically above where, you know, first class, top of, you know, all these things. And I'm going, so when is the hospital going to be ready? Well, the timeline is 2028, this digital assistant answer. So it was really quite interesting. So they're feeding it information, but stay tuned.
Yeah.
And the other bit of information I wanted to share with you is lately I've been receiving any emails from OPCUG in my spam folder. So all of the announcements for the meetings are going into my spam folder, as are the newsletters. I don't know when that started, a couple months ago. So not sure what you've changed, but I wanted to share that.
What are you using for email?
I'm using, Rogers, Yahoo.
Yahoo, okay. I don't know. Yeah, so you're using it web-based? You're not using a local mail client?
Web-based.
Yeah. So I would look on the Yahoo to see if they have anything in the spam filtering that you can have it, you know, just sometimes the from address will be always treated as non-spam or things like that, a safe sender list. So it's probably worth checking out on there. It's certainly nothing that we're doing differently. I mean, our emails are blandly the same from week to week. And so it's, I found also on, Gmail, they seem to have gotten more aggressive of what they're considering to be spam, and it's affected the Google Groups that we use for the member forum, as well as the announcement list, and the board has a list as well. And I found that more and more messages are being held for moderation, and it's a real pain because I don't find out about the fact that they're held for moderation for sometimes a couple of days before I find out.
Yeah.
And then can release the message. So it seems like maybe a lot of mail systems are getting more aggressive about what they consider to be spam.
Okay, because I saw that Michelin was having trouble getting it as well. Anyways, thanks.
Yeah. Okay.
This is Gail. I have the same problem with my Rogers, and there's no way. I have web-based, but it comes down to either my Apple or my Outlook, and it's always in the spam folder. All these OPCU Gmail.
Yeah. I don't know what it's triggering on. Yeah. It's very, very odd. Well, at least you're getting it. Linda has a problem with her Simpatico email that some people email her and it just doesn't show up anywhere. The user does not get a non-delivery report and she doesn't get it. She looks online at the Simpatico, which is actually run by Microsoft. It's actually a live mail, or yeah, one whatever they're calling it now. And she looks online; it's not showing up there. It's not showing up in spam folder or regular folder locally. So it just disappears into the ether. I have no idea, and she's never been able to figure it out either. Where some emails just disappear to. Very peculiar.
I think you're right, Chris. I think this problem is recent with email providers, because I'm relatively lazy. I have a boilerplate, a template for the reminder message, for example, and All I do is change the agenda listings.
Yeah.
So the links and that kind of stuff have been the same for probably the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So why would they suddenly start getting directed to spam? It makes no sense.
Well, Gail's had this problem for years.
We can't blame Microsoft necessarily this time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But Gail, you've had this for years, huh? I'm pretty sure she has. Yeah,
the last few weeks I've had this problem.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a real pain.
Yeah. Okay, because it's been the problem that I discovered in the Google Groups has been less than a month, I think, that it's been a problem there. And then it seemed to have lessened some, and then just the other day I had another three that ended up getting held up. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on. And, I mean, good luck trying to find somebody at Google that you can actually talk to say, hey, what's going on? Especially with a free service, like we're using the free Google Groups. And, yeah, they don't want to talk to people about that.
I find it brilliant, these internet companies that don't have an email address.
Yeah. They don't want to hear complaints. Okay, I don't see any other questions in the chat at all. So you got a couple of wrap-up slides there, Alan?
I do. I'll run them by anybody has anything else, we can come back to that.
Yep.
Okay. Let me find the controls. Here we go. Okay, so first up, a reminder for our next regular meeting, our monthly meeting, which will be on May the 8th. And the topic is free software. And the presenter is a gentleman from Ottawa, who actually is a writer he's retired, but he writes articles for Full Circle magazine, which is actually a Linux magazine and Ubuntu magazine. but he does, he uses Ubuntu. He uses Linux quite a lot, but he also uses a lot of free software products. So he's going to be talking about some of the packages that he uses and how they can be useful for you too. And the final slide I have is just for next week, beginning of May. So Wednesday, May the 1st, will be our next Q&A session. As usual, if you have answers, we'd like to hear those too. Or if you have topics that you'd like to share, send us a detail or suggestion box at opcug.ca, and we'll be happy to add your topic to the agenda.
One of the things so that I
was asking, in a house with no windows, I think he doesn't mean no doors and no windows. I think he means no Microsoft Windows.
Yeah. One of the things that I had promised for this week was part two of my sharing files in Windows. And we covered two of the methods last week, and I was going to cover two of the methods this week. And I started down a rabbit hole, and it got deeper and deeper. And so I will have something for next week, whether I have the last two methods or perhaps only one of them, because it's getting rather lengthy. So I might split it into two separate ones. So I still have the two topics I still have to cover are NAS, network attached storage, and traditional Windows file sharing techniques and how to set that up and use it. So they may be bundled into one for next week, or I may cover NAS next week, and then it would be the week after, I guess, the general meeting would be the final one on Windows, traditional Windows file sharing. So my apologies for anybody who showed up tonight expecting that one, but it just turned into a bit of a monster for me. Okay, that's all I have, I think. So thanks very much, everybody, for showing up, and we'll see you next week's Q&A.